And away we go. My Car Guru for this Monday morning, kicking off another week here. And we welcome in Lenny Lawson, the Car Guru. Good morning, Lenny.
You know, what a great weekend. We got exactly what we needed on Saturday. Rain, right? And then we got sunshine yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And today we have this week we have a few days of beautiful weather to look forward to.
Yeah, finally warmed up after this dogwood winter we've been going through here.
Yeah, it was. It's been cool. Of course, I'm kind of a long sleeve guy. Even in the summer, I'll walk in the dealership and my nephew will look at me and say, "Lenny, why are you wearing long sleeves? It's hot outside."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I don't know. I guess I just don't want to show off my guns."
You know? That's nice of you to spare others the gun show there.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I don't want to intimidate people with my massive body build.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never was a weightlifter, were you?
No, not a whole lot. I did a little bit of it when I was younger, in high school especially, in the off season. I played baseball. I never would lift during the season. It made the muscles too sore, and you had to be more fluid for baseball. But I did some lifting in the off season.
Fluid, you say?
Yeah, baseball, you don't want your muscles to be real, real tight. You want to be loose and fluid, you know, making your movements, swinging and running and so forth, so...
I'll go with that. I tended to play sports that did not require weightlifting.
Yeah.
Now, conditioning was another thing. I was a basketball player from an early age. Never was just quite good enough or tall enough to make major college, for sure. I probably could have played with a small college. I just had kind of lost the interest there at the end, but... continued to play, though, in intramurals and stuff at UT and had a ball doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Got to play with Bernard King and Ernie Grunfeld in a pickup game one time. That was interesting.
I would say that was interesting. They probably schooled you a little bit, didn't they?
Well, I had Bernard King on my team along with Stanley Morgan. Now, you know who Stanley Morgan was?
Football player, wide receiver. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Wide receiver, played for the New England Patriots. So, and it was Grunfeld and four other guys and Bernard King and me and Stanley Morgan. And basically, I would take the ball in, and then that's the last time I would touch it. And then they would throw the ball to me after, you know, when it was after the other team had the ball. I did kind of try to stand out of the way and just observe. That Stanley Morgan was short, but he could jump.
Yeah, he was a tremendous athlete and a really good receiver. They used to run that go pattern down the sideline with him, and Condridge Holloway would lay it in there to him. He was pretty fast.
I think he was basically maybe 5'9". It was kind of amazing to me how short he was. I towered over him.
Mm-hmm.
In height only, that's for sure. But anyway, that's my basketball career story. And I was thinking, I was in a moment of reflection this morning. I was sitting in my comfortable chair. Shady, my big black dog, Mutt, that I love dearly, was resting on the floor beside me. And I was reflecting on this article out of Porsche Club of America magazine. I know that sounds extremely boring. So why would he be doing that? Well, you know, I just like cars, and there was an interesting story about... a car, a Porsche 356. It was a 1962 model. This guy that was a new member of the Porsche Club had always wanted a 356, and so he began his search and found one in Gainesville, Florida, and went and picked the car up. And long story short, he discovered that this was a very special car. In fact, it was a car that was built custom color. It was actually a kind of a minty. That's not really a good description. I have a hard time describing color sometimes. Just imagine a really bright green, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And but the car was red, all right? But originally, he found out that this car had an unbelievable history and actually was one of the most valuable 356s in existence because it had more options than any other 356 ever built. It was custom ordered by a man who lived in Hawaii. Well, so this car has a long journey, you know, and it makes its way to from one loving set of loving hands to another. Eventually, becomes red, sitting in a garage in a classified ad being run to find a new owner, and this guy finds it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he decides to restore the car. And, you know, I was thinking also about the history of a car. You know, sometimes, Tim, and you and I have talked about this, the history of an old car is often worth as much to me as the old car itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you see I bought a 68 Torino one time. It was a 428 Cobra Jet car, and just an amazing one-owner story out of Kingsport, Bluntville area. And I wasn't really turned on that much about the car. What intrigued me was the fact that, you know, that it was still in the hands of the original owner. And his story, just sitting there, and he may be listening right now, but he was a regular radio show listener, and just the way he talked about the car, you know, and what the car meant to him. Mm-hmm. at that point, you know, you think about the history of a car. I mean, a car is, to me, kind of like a house with four wheels on it. It reflects who we are as people sometimes, how we live, what's important to us, what we do for fun. I think car stories are often a major part of our life story. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. No question, because it's like songs. You know, you think about where you were at certain times with songs, cars the same way, the kind of memories you have of when you had that car, what was going on in your life, and those kinds of things.
Yeah. When I got married in 1978, my wife and I had planned this honeymoon for many, many years, at least 2 years, and saved up, worked at a feed store in Knoxville, a Purina feed store, so that I could pay for this honeymoon adventure. But we were going to get married and then get on an airplane and fly to San Francisco. And then we were going to stay in San Francisco a few days and drive down the coast highway. And we actually did that. My vision, though, was to drive down the coast highway in a, you know, Corvette, maybe a Porsche, something like that. Ended up in a red two-door Ford Fairmont. Not exactly my dream car for driving down one of the most famous roads in the world, let alone or America, at least in America. But anyway, I remember that car. I've got a sharp picture of that boxed off fox body boring car. But, you know, that car has meaning. I would love to have it today. Not because it's a Ford Fairmont, you know, but because that was my honeymoon car.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people who love cars get that. I went to Wendy's yesterday to get a fairly unsatisfactory, unremarkable lunch, and pulled through it. Not that there's anything wrong with Wendy's. It's just, you know, plain chicken sandwich with French fries. Mm-hmm. Hard to get excited. So the parking places were all full. So I went next door to Burger King parking lot and sat there in my 65 Corvair with the top down and was just munching away on those fries. And all of a sudden, I sensed this car pull up beside me in the opposite direction. And this guy says, 65 model? And I looked over with a mouth full of fries and said, yeah, it is. 1965. He said, Corsa? I said, yeah. 4-1 barrel carburetors. 140 horsepower? Yep. That was the beginning of about a 20-minute long conversation about cars and the meaning and history of cars in that man's life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and while it was a little bit, you know, I would like to have just sat there in peace and wolfed down this delicacy, I really enjoyed the conversation. We ended up swapping business cards and talking about cars and life and stuff like that. And, you know, that's what cars do. That's what they do for me and a lot of people. And that's what makes things special, just like that Porsche I was telling you about. You know, the Porsche, which he paid a very low price for, that 356, now it's probably one of the most valuable 356s on the planet because of what it is and how it was optioned. And just think about the hands that car passed through, you know, and the people who lived with that car and became a part of their family. Uh-huh. I recently bought another car that was truly part of a family. It had been since 1978. The owners didn't need to sell it. They also may be listening to the show. That's how they learned about me. Money was not a factor. They just wanted it to find a new home and a right home for their treasure. And I was fortunate enough to be selected, you know, to be that person. And, you know, to me, that just means more than a lot of things do as far as this business is concerned. You know, one of the things that this radio show affords me is the ability to reach out and learn about cars that are out there. Because sometimes, actually, Tim, they actually come to me now.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's quite an honor. But anyway, well, let's take our first break. We'll be back here in just a minute.
And back here Monday morning, my car guru with the guru himself, Lenny Lawson.
I was talking to somebody on the lot yesterday. I had a customer who's driving a fairly new Lincoln. I think it has 30 plus thousand miles on it. And she's got my cell phone number and great long-term customer. And she called me and said that, she's got white smoke coming out of her tailpipe.
Mm-hmm.
And she even sent me a video, and I said, well, don't drive the car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's call customer roadside assistance and let's get you to the dealership. And this was on Saturday is when she let me know that. So they hired a wrecker, and of course the wrecker's paid for under roadside assistance, and they pulled the vehicle down to Greenville yesterday. Well, I met her at the dealership, and she said, well, can you loan me a car? I said, of course. There's, you don't have to ask that. You know, we never want anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be stranded because of a car problem. So I don't care if I have to drag something off the lot. I'm not going to let somebody walk. That's just my philosophy.
Yeah.
But anyway, she shows up at the dealership and we're talking. And she says, well, what do you have a car for me? I said, yes, you're going to drive an electric car. And Ooh. She said, oh, my goodness, I don't know if I can do that. How do you do that? And I said, well, you just do it like you would normally do it.
Mm-hmm.
You get in, you push the start button, and you hit the accelerator and go.
Mm-hmm.
She says, is anything else different? I said, well, it's different. I mean, you won't hear any engine noise or anything like that. And, you know, you got all this technological wizardry that's going on inside this car. So anyway, I'm hoping that, you know, the acceptance of the Mach-E Mustang, which is still poorly named, I think, is going to be popular. The problem is, Tim, it's going to be getting them. The problem is it's getting anything right now.
Yeah.
She says, boy, your lot sure looks empty. I said, well, thank you very much. And it's not only my lot, it's pretty much every dealer
uh-huh.
in the United States. Inventories are way, way down. And it's because of the microchip shortage. And I mean, I'm in the car industry. I get it. You know, I see these things and know these things because it affects me directly. The average person driving down the road doesn't have a clue that there's a microprocessor or microchip shortage in this country. But, Tim, now it's putting a lot of people out of work.
Mm-hmm.
They just closed, well, just last week, they closed the Kansas City plant for Ford Motor Company where they build F-150s and the Transit vans. That's 7,000 people that are on indefinite layoff because they can't get computer chips. Now, there are only two plants that build F-150s. That's the Dearborn plant, which I have toured before, and then there's the Kansas City plant. And, you know, here's a vehicle that sells 900,000 plus, and they're talking about the industry now is going to, could be down. At first, they were saying the industry could be down 1.5 million units. It looks like it's going to be closer to 5 million.
Hmm.
Now, that's out of a total sales for a good year of around 18 million.
Hmm.
I mean, that's a huge drop. And, you know, it's affecting not only the car industry, but, the dealers and the sales. I'll tell you how it's impacting you here in just a minute, but it's impacting the rental car companies like Hertz and National and Enterprise. They can't get cars. You know, typically our Enterprise rep which what they do is they buy cars from General Motors and Ford and Nissan and everybody else. They put them in service for a period of time, and then they take them out and they sell them to dealers. And in that process, they make money through rentals. And also, sometimes they make a little, pick up a little extra profit on the cars themselves. In this region, we have a representative. He said normally he would have anywhere from 1,200 to 1,500 cars, total availability, for him to find a home for, meaning to find a dealer to buy these cars. Last week, he had 100.
Mm.
100.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what happens when the supply goes down? And you have a high demand market, then the prices go up. So, you know, as a car buyer, you know, you're at a disadvantage and an advantage. You just need to know how to maximize the advantages. The disadvantage is that dealers are going to be a whole lot less flexible on price. I was watching, you know, several months ago, the average discount, if you pay attention to car dealer advertising on an F-150, was anywhere from $13,000 to $15,000 off of the sticker price, which included a big discount and the rebates and all that stuff. Well, now the rebates are just about gone, pretty much dried up, and the discounts aren't as big. I saw a dealer advertising, I think $5,000 off the other day, which, you know, really, and that's probably just, they probably just have one at that price. Pretty much the transaction price that I'm seeing around the Tri-Cities, looking at the dealership websites, and in Knoxville too, I don't just look in the Tri-Cities, but in Knoxville too, Tim, pretty much lots of stuff is being sold for MSRP or over MSRP. And so as a car buyer, you know, don't anticipate going into a car dealership and getting a big discount, because they're just not there. Now, the positive side of this is, because of the massive shortage of used cars, is that your used car is going up in value every month. Just last month, the average used vehicle on the market that was traded for, from the records that we provide through some of the internet tools that we use, the average transaction price for trade-ins was up 14% in 1 month. And so, Tim, I was looking at it was some pickup truck. I can't remember whether it was a Ford or a Chevrolet. I think it was a Chevrolet Silverado.
Mm-hmm.
We have this program that we use to appraise vehicles. It tells us what the current value is, and anticipates through its extensive modeling and stuff that what that vehicle will be worth a month from now. This Silverado was going to go up $5,000 in value in 1 month.
Oh, goodness.
1 month.
1 month.
We're seeing very dramatic swings in used car values.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're in the market for a used car, you're going to be suffering through a similar thing. Used car values are up, but your trade-in is worth more. You know, I encouraged folks last week, you know, just don't settle for too little for your vehicle. You know, you can play hardball on your trade value because you just don't have any leverage on the vehicle selling price itself. Now, there's going to be dealers saying, "Wow, I heard Lenny Lawson talking about that dealers aren't discounting cars, and we are." Of course, we're still discounting cars. We have to. We're going to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody shops around four or five dealerships and comes into our dealership, and they say, "We can buy it for this." You know, they have documentation to prove it. We're not going to miss a deal. The problem is we can't replace it, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I sell something out there on the lot, well, for example, I got one of the Mach 1 Mustangs that's sitting in the showroom. And when I sell, a Mustang plant is shut down. So I've got, 12, 15 Mustangs in process that were supposed to be being built, but they're probably sitting there with no wheels on them right now.
Yeah.
You know, because they can't finish the cars. The plant is shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this computer chip shortage. So this is real. Also, it can have an impact on replacement parts. If you have a complicated item on your vehicle that needs to be replaced, and it involves, it has microchips, you may be in for a long wait. and be curious to see what the manufacturers do in that regard. But everything from airbags to taillights to, you know, braking systems, there's a lot of chips on a vehicle. They estimate between 140 and 150 microprocessor chips on an F-150, on a loaded up F-150.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like, you know, we can't get two or three computer chips. There's a bunch of them that are required. So anyway, this is just part of the industry that's going on back in the car market for a car this weekend or this week. Thank goodness we still have a pretty good inventory. We were able to purchase some vehicles from dealers in other markets, and of course, with the grand opening of our new showroom, Nissan blessed us with about 100 extra Nissans that have been coming in before the plant shut down. So we have inventory, and I encourage folks to come down and do business with us. I'd love to pay you too much for your trade. It just gives me a warm place in my heart. So anyway, we'll take our last break, and we'll be back here in just a minute.
And back here for the final moment or two of My Car Guru on this Monday morning with Lenny Lawson.
Big meeting starts tomorrow. It's public meeting, so if you want to watch it online with me, you can. But it's the Tennessee Motor Vehicle Commission. I think you can get to the meeting on the Motor Vehicle Commission's website. But they're really clamping down on false advertising, misleading, deceptive advertising, and you know, it couldn't come at a better time because it has gotten totally out of control with a lot of dealers promising, you know, things like $8,000 over book value for your trade, and you know, all of this stuff when without any type of disclaimer whatsoever, pricing vehicles deceptively online, lumping together multiple different types of offers, which are all mutually exclusive. So this kind of stuff is going to hopefully stop. It's probably going to take some big fines and stuff to make it totally stop. But anyway, that meeting is tomorrow, and they're going to be taking action against some of the bad apples in the market. And hopefully we'll be able to believe what you actually see, hear, or read, you know, as far as advertising is concerned, starting tomorrow. So the meeting starts at 9:30. I think you've... 10:30 is when they're going to start talking about some of the dealers. So anyway, be interesting to watch.
All right. Interesting viewing for sure. That'll do it for My Car Guru on this Monday morning. And Lenny, we'll talk to you tomorrow.